Hey guys, good afternoon and welcome to the 330 Sports Show. Today is Tuesday, September 13th, 2022. My name is Justin Coffin and we are a Youngstown studio production. On today's show, we're going to get into a lot of football stuff. We're going to start off. So basically, I'm going to break this down into three segments. Segment one is going to be the Cleveland Browns and the NFL. Segment two is going to be the Ohio State Buckeyes and college football. And segment three will be a little bit of the Cleveland Guardians, and we'll kind of wrap up with that. So we're going to start off first with the Cleveland Browns. Obviously, a huge, huge win over the Carolina Panthers this weekend in Charlotte. So the Browns go in, get a 26-24 win. The Browns' first opening day win since 2004. So just great there to get a win. And we're going to talk about the ins and outs of that victory and all the little minutia and stuff like that. But first, I want to start with some game balls. So I'm going to just call this the pick six segment. So I'm going to start by giving out six game balls here to Cleveland Browns players. So obviously, you got to start with Cade York, the fourth round draft pick out of LSU, comes in his very first NFL game, at least NFL game that counts, goes 4 for 4 with the 58-yard game-winning kick with, I think there was 13 seconds left when he kicked it. And 2 for 2 on extra points. So scores 14 of the Browns points, and obviously a huge, huge factor in the win. Without that kick, we're having a totally different conversation today. The second game ball is going to go to Myles Garrett. I saw this on PFF this morning. He was the highest rated NFL player in week one. So based on his pass rush grades, his, you know, just everything accumulated there, Myles Garrett was the number one player in week one. 2 sacks, 6 quarterback pressures, and obviously put Baker Mayfield on his ass a couple times. Nick Chubb gets another game ball for me. 22 carries, 144 yards, 6.1 yards per carry. Just a fantastic job by Nick Chubb. Had one catch for 2 yards. As we all know, Nick Chubb is not going to make a huge difference in the pass game. Generally can make, you know, a little bit of difference here and there, but Nick Chubb is one of, I believe, 5 running backs in NFL history to average more than 5 yards per carry throughout their career. And, you know, he's up there with the likes of Jim Brown, Barry Sanders, and people like that. So great company there, and continues it in game one. Next up, another offensive player, Donovan Peoples-Jones. His numbers aren't going to like light up the scoreboard or light up the world. Didn't even score a touchdown, but had 6 big catches in this game for 60 yards. And most of those catches were contested balls, obviously helping out his backup, now starting quarterback, Jacoby Brissett. Kareem Hunt, 11 carries, 46 yards. Nothing fantastic there, but had a big touchdown on the ground, and four receptions, 24 yards and a touchdown. So I like how Jim Donovan said it, one by land and one through the air there for Kareem Hunt. So a great game for him, and showing the Browns and the NFL why he is so important. He was injured half of the season last year, so his impact comes in and shows right away. And then the last one, I'm going to give it to 2 offensive linemen, Wyatt Teller and James Hudson III. Now, Wyatt Teller was the highest rated Pro Football Focus graded run blocker of the week, or at that guard position overall. And James Hudson, who was much maligned last year, if you remember, in the Baker's last game against the Steelers, it was a really ugly Monday night game. He was thrown into duty there and just had a terrible game. Now, with Jack Conklin out, he has shown right away that he's able to step into the starting lineup and get the job done. I mean, just look what the Browns did on the ground. And Jacoby Brissett was only sacked 1 time and only pressured a few other times. So well done there. Now, I want to get a little bit more into Cade York and what he did. Just, I mean, an unbelievable job by the rookie stepping right in. Goes 4 for 4 again, as I mentioned, 2 for 2 on extra points. That 58-yarder when the clock had stopped, there was 8 seconds left. That is the second longest field goal in Cleveland Browns history. Not even Phil Dawson has a longer one. Phil Dawson's longest one was 57, believe it or not. And then some weird stat I read was it was the longest made field goal by a rookie in their first game in the NFL history, which is a weird random stat, but very cool for Cade York. And obviously I saw there's a bunch of great memes out there, but the one I like the best was Cade York actually learned how to kick from Chuck Norris, or actually put that in reverse. He taught Chuck Norris how to kick. So pretty good start there by Cade York. Now the Browns, until Deshaun Watson gets back, you know, we obviously know we're not going to light up the air with a bunch of passing yards. We have to play the game smart. We got to play physical football, and we're going to have to run it. And we're going to have to do it with our two elite backs. Maybe you throw in Jerome Ford. D'Ernest Johnson was actually not even active for this game. And as a lot of you guys know, the Browns have a 53-man roster. You also have a practice squad. But of those 53, you're actually only allowed to dress, I believe it's 46 for each game. So, you know, D'Ernest Johnson, just a luxury for the Browns right now that they have, is someone that's not even dressing that would start for probably a couple teams in the NFL. So pretty awesome there. So if we look at Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, just kind of that 1-2 punch. Chubb with 140, I think I said 144 yards earlier. It was actually 142, but 6.1 yards a carry. And then Kareem Hunt just kind of doing it all, about 70 total yards, but 2 total touchdowns, and really, really making a difference on this Browns team, especially in those critical. He had a huge screen pass from Jacoby Brissett that got the Browns a first down. It was like 3rd and 18 or something like that, and was able to break a few tackles and get that first down. Now, we're going to talk about Jacoby Brissett. Now, again, Jacoby Brissett would be considered a top 3 backup in the league. Now, when you say that with a starting quarterback, though, that sort of puts him, you know, in the bottom tier of NFL starting quarterbacks. So is Jacoby Brissett going to make a ton of athletic plays, going to have this huge big arm? No, but I think you're going to see a lot of really good things out of Jacoby Brissett. I think this is a future coach in the NFL or college or somewhere, but he is a very cerebral player. He gets it. He understands his teammates. And you got to remember, too, he played 2 quarters in the preseason with a brand new team. No Amari Cooper, no Kareem Hunt, no Nick Chubb in the preseason. A lot of his offensive line wasn't playing out there. So these guys are still learning each other. And you could say, well, they had the whole preseason. Yeah, I get that. But, you cannot simulate against an NFL defense, a live NFL defense. And I think going up against Brian Burns, and the Panthers have some legit dudes on that defense, especially in the secondary. And, I think Jacoby Brissett did an adequate job. I wouldn't quite, I'd probably give him a B minus for this game. He completed more than 50%. He had a touchdown, but he didn't turn the ball over. And that is crucial to not making big mistakes. One of the plays, I believe he missed Amari Cooper. It was one of the early drives, or Donovan Peoples-Jones, and could have had a big gain or possibly a touchdown. But, those are things hopefully that it cleaned up as the season progresses, as the season goes on. So Jacoby Brissett, again, not going to light the world on fire, not going to be a Pro Bowler, but can he be a game manager type quarterback? I know that's a little bit cliche, but I think the answer to that is yes. So let's see what Jacoby Brissett can do. Especially let's let him work with these guys a little bit more. Hopefully you get Amari Cooper back in there, worked in. And you got to remember, too, Anthony Schwartz has really struggled, and David Bell is a rookie just coming in. So hopefully you can acclimate these guys to the league a little bit more. Donovan Peoples-Jones, like I said, I thought had a great, great game for the Browns at wide receiver. Amari Cooper, you know what you're going to get out of him. He did only have 3 catches for 17 yards, but he's going to draw a lot of the attention from the defense. So that's a look at the Browns offense and defense and kind of just some notes I thought. Let's go ahead and take a look at the AFC North. Now, the Bengals obviously won the AFC North last year. Steelers made the playoffs at 9-7-1 last year. The Browns were in third, and then the Ravens unfortunately came in last because they were so injury riddled throughout the season. So the Ravens, Steelers, Browns all start 1-0. The Bengals start 0-1. But that Bengals Steelers game may be one of the craziest games that there will be all year. Joe Burrow was sacked 7 times. 5 turnovers. His very first pass was returned for a touchdown. TJ Watt, now that it will be updated. I believe TJ Watt, they said he's not going to require surgery, so he will miss at least 6 weeks. But, you know, that guy, you know, you never want to see someone injured. I don't care if they're playing for your favorite team or your least favorite team. Never wish injury on someone. So hopefully he gets back and healthy and on the field. But that will be a huge, huge loss for the Steelers defense these next weeks, months, however long it is until he returns. Najee Harris also left that game with a foot injury. T. Higgins left that game. Cam Hayward left that game. So this was a, you know, a bruised and banged up game for both teams in this. And there were 5 overtime possessions. If you know overtime, the rules in the regular season, they're 10-minute. It's a 10-minute extra period, and very well could have ended in a tie. 4 game-winning kick attempts. And previous to going to overtime, Cincinnati scored on actually the very last play of the game, scored a touchdown, and then was not able to convert that extra point. It actually got blocked, and you know, went to overtime, and Cincinnati eventually loses that game. Evan McPherson missed a couple kicks, not necessarily all his fault. I believe Cincinnati's long snapper was injured and not able to return in that game. So just a crazy, crazy game from the AFC North. And, you know, it is what it is. So, you know, but again, after week one, you got 3 AFC North teams sitting at 1-0, the Bengals at 0-1, and you know, we'll go from there. So let's look around the rest of the NFL and see what we're at. So Thursday night, you obviously had the Bills just completely dominate the defending champion Los Angeles Rams. Last night, you had the Seahawks stun the Broncos in Russell Wilson's return. He was booed mightily. It was a bad look. He had a ton of mistakes, but still threw for 350 yards. Last night, that Denver offense fumbled the ball twice inside the 1-yard line to lose that game. And they had a 63-yard field goal attempt to win it. And that just missed by a couple yards. And around the rest of the NFL, AFC South goes winless. The Titans and Jags lose, and the Colts and the Texans actually tie. So not a good look for the AFC South. The AFC champ Bengals, as I mentioned, the only team in the North to lose. The Giants and the Saints have big comebacks. The Cowboys, Cardinals, Jets, Patriots, Packers, 49ers really have a bad game and just play bad. And don't overreact too much to week one. But, you know, it is what it is. And then the Bills, Chiefs, Ravens, Dolphins, Vikings, and Buccaneers were kind of you know, on the upper echelon of teams that performed well in week one. So we'll see where that goes from there. The Browns will now take on the New York Jets in their next game. Hopefully, to anyone that's a Baker Mayfield fan or kind of like half in, half out on the Browns, can, you know, settle in, close the book, and move on from Baker Mayfield. I'm kind of tired of talking about it. You know, it just is what it is. And one other note from that game, from that Browns-Carolina game. So Carolina had, you know, they didn't have very many yards in that game. And to top it off, 153 of those yards actually came on three separate plays. Two of them were busted coverages, and one was actually a drop snap fumble by Baker that Christian McCaffrey picked up and ran 28 yards. So you had a 75-yard touchdown for a busted coverage. You had a 50-yard busted coverage that set up another touchdown, and then you had a 28-yard fumble. So you add those up, that's 153 yards out of you know, they're low 200s. So you take that away, and, you know, overall the Browns defense played fairly well, pretty strong output. So we look to the schedule, and I hate to do this, but, you know, 17 games on the schedule, we're one game in, so 16 left. You got the Panthers out of the way, kind of like an awkward, weird game to start the season with, but you win it in dramatic fashion. Hopefully that puts the season in, you know, on a good route for the rest of the year. Now you have the New York Jets coming into town, probably Joe Flacco starting at quarterback. They did not look good in week one against the Ravens. And, you know, again, this is the Browns home opener. If they can start 2-0, you know, Let's just see where it can go from there. If you saw my playoff predictions, I actually did not have the Browns in the playoffs. I had the Browns finishing at 9-8, just missing the playoffs behind Denver, which we'll see how that pick looks now. But your first four games, if you're looking at it, Panthers, Jets, Steelers on a Thursday night, and then the Falcons. None of those four teams are most likely playoff teams. I always hate to count out the Steelers because Mike Tomlin is probably the best coach in football. Currently, you can argue Bill Belichick or maybe even John Harbaugh, but I think Mike Tomlin, probably the best head coach in football. And so we'll see where that goes with the Steelers, but missing TJ Watt is going to be a big, big loss for the Pittsburgh Steelers over the next few weeks. You know, you got to handle business week one, week to week. You handled business week one. You're on to the Jets. Let's just see where you go from there. So that was a look at, you know, the Browns and kind of their schedule. Write in or feel free to comment on anything if you have any comments. But the Browns, this was kind of cool today. They put this out on their social media. They unveiled the new field design for this year. And they kind of are going back to some older roots, kind of that brownie elf that used to be one of their, you know, the Browns have never had a logo on their helmet, but they have had like the brownie elf. I don't really know the origin of that, but that's what the field design is going to look like this year based on fan voting. So kind of a cool, different look for the Browns. But you know, just a neat thing for them to do and kind of bringing the fans involved there too. I want to put out a PSA for everyone out there. Now, this is my friends included because we have several group texts and I'm in three fantasy football leagues, one with a bunch of family, one with a group of teachers that I used to teach with, and then one that I've been in for like 30 years, probably since I was like, you know, in middle school or something like that. But, you know, I'm proud to say my teams all won this week and they went 3-0. However, no one cares. No one gives a shit about your fantasy team. So this is a friendly PSA that no one cares about your fantasy team. Enjoy it. Enjoy the win in the comforts of your own home and maybe brag about it with your friends. But we don't need to see any social media posts about your fantasy football team or we don't need to engage in long, lengthy fantasy football discussions. We get it. We know we all play it. So just a friendly reminder out there to all of you guys and gals that play fantasy football. And again, in a respectful public service announcement there for everyone. So Let's switch gears. Let's go to segment two, and we're going to go to the Ohio State Buckeyes and college football. So Ohio State, again, this weekend, coming off the big win over Notre Dame, has a home game against Arkansas State and takes care of business 45-12. Now, you know, they didn't cover. The spread was 43.5. They won by 33, but, you know, we'll take that. The total was 68. Obviously, you add the numbers up, that's 57. So the under hit and Arkansas State covered, but a win is a win. So, and especially with the craziness of college football that I'm going to talk to you guys about here in a little bit. But Ohio State gets the big win over Arkansas State, moves on, remains number three in the country. And we'll talk about some of these other teams here in a minute. But let's go to some of the Buckeyes' top performers from this weekend. So here are my Buckeye leaves that I'm going to give to the offensive players this weekend. CJ Stroud, 16-24, 351 yards, 4 touchdowns, no picks. Travion Henderson, the big back, 10 carries, 87 yards, 8.7 yards a carry. And then the two wide receivers stepping up with Jackson Smith and Jigba still out, should be back this weekend, by the way. But Emeka Egbuka and Marvin Harrison Jr. So Egbuka, 4 receptions, 118 yards, 1 touchdown, also had 1 rush for 27 yards. And then Marvin Harrison Jr., just an elite wide receiver. Emeka Egbuka was actually the number one wide receiver in his class. Marvin Harrison was a high 4-star athlete, but comes in, and Ohio State's backup quarterback was actually his high school quarterback, Kyle McCord. But Marvin Harrison, 7 catches on the day, 184 yards, which is 26.3 yards of reception, and also 3 touchdowns, and actually should have probably had a 4th, but they ruled it incomplete on that game. So a nice performance for Marvin Harrison, for Emeka Egbuka, for Travion Henderson, and CJ Stroud. Now I'm going to go ahead and go now to the defensive players of the game. And Steel Chambers really stepped up in this game. Jim Knowles' defense is really looking good this year. Now, they kind of, you know, they're letting teams move a little bit between the 20s, which is totally fine. But they're giving up field goals, not so much touchdowns. So this year they've given up 1 touchdown and 5 field goals. So you will take that every day of the week. Steel Chambers, one of the starting linebackers, 6 tackles, 1 sack. Michael Hall Jr. has just been an absolute force this year so far. 3 tackles, 1 sack, and all 3 of those tackles were TFLs, which is tackles for loss. And then Cam Brown, the corner, stepped up, had 5 tackles, played some good pass defense. Denzel Burke, who is the other starting corner, kind of struggled on Saturday. And, you know, again, so there's going to be some growing pains. You change up the defense, you change up some personnel, maybe some schemes. There's going to be some growing pains that go on with this defense. But overall, as a whole, this Buckeye team looks really, really good, especially going on with what else is going on in college football. College football was honestly drunk this past weekend, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But take a look at the rest of the Ohio State schedule. So far, you know, you've taken care of business against Notre Dame, who coming into that game was the number 5 team in the country. You beat them 21-10. Then we'll talk about what happened to Notre Dame this past weekend, but they actually were upset by Marshall at home this past weekend. But you know, speaking on Ohio State, you take care of Notre Dame and Arkansas State. You have the Toledo Rockets coming into town. Toledo is actually expected to win the MAC conference this year. So this is a team that will be, you know, Ohio State should win comfortably, but this isn't a team you should take too lightly. This is a team that should be able to put up some points, you know, maybe get after the quarterback a little bit. But I expect Ohio State to win by, I'm going to say, by at least 4 touchdowns. I think the spread is somewhere in the low 30s right now, but this will be a night game in Columbus coming up this weekend. And actually, surprisingly, the game is on Fox of all places. So, you know, I'll get the actual spread to you on Thursday once I know it, but that is what it's looking like this weekend. So a 7 p.m. kick on Fox, Toledo, and Ohio State. let's go ahead and take a look around the rest of college football. And again, what an absolutely crazy, crazy weekend. So started off, Alabama, number one team in the country, goes to Austin, Texas, the former power. And whatever you want to say about Texas, they are still a blue blood in college football. But Alabama goes in there and is trailing by two, goes in, kicks a last-minute field goal and gets the win over Texas there. So a very nice performance by the Texas Longhorns. And Quinn Ewers, former Ohio State quarterback last year, was actually injured in the first quarter. So Texas played with its backup quarterback for three quarters of that game. Texas A&M falls to Appalachian State. So the number six team in the country drops. Notre Dame, again, stunned by Marshall. They fall to 0-2. So Marcus Freeman, the Marcus Freeman era in Notre Dame has not started off smoothly. 0-3 to start his career, 0-2 to start the 2022 season. Number nine, Baylor, also loses on the road. They lose to 21st ranked BYU. So you lose number six, eight, and nine all fall. And also on top of that, number 12, Florida, falls to SEC East foe Kentucky. And we're going to talk about Kentucky here in a little bit because Youngstown State is actually traveling to Kentucky and Lexington this coming weekend. Also, you have Pitt and Tennessee played this past weekend. Great game back and forth, went to overtime. Tennessee prevails in that game. You had Wisconsin, number 19, at home in Camp Randall, had Washington State come into town and just stunk it up. And Washington State wins in Madison over number 19 ranked Wisconsin. Kansas, 2-0 this weekend, which is, they won two games all of last season. They beat West Virginia down in Morgantown. And actually, this is an interesting thing. That game went to overtime and in Kansas won by 13. So they went and scored a touchdown and then had a return touchdown to put that game away. Nebraska. This is just, I feel really bad for the Nebraska Cornhusker fans. Part of me really feels bad for former now head coach Scott Frost. But he was fired on Sunday morning. Nebraska loses 45-42 to Georgia Southern. And this is one of those games that, or one of those situations where it just needed to end for both parties. If you look up on a buddy of mine sent me this, and I'm not going to give you all the details, but it's called the Tennessee 10-gallon hat or the Louisville wood chipper or something like that. But if you look it up on Urban Dictionary, it's neither pleasurable for either party. And that's what I think. You had to have an amicable divorce, if you will, between Nebraska and Scott Frost. And hopefully in a couple years or whatever, he'll be welcomed back and he can maybe mend fences there. But an unfortunate situation. Scott Frost did not do the job we thought he would do in Nebraska. They really struggle and, just losing all these close games. But I think I saw a stat. It was like the first time, like 214-0 was Nebraska scoring 35 points or more. And obviously, the game Saturday ended that streak. Iowa State and Iowa in a, in-state rivalry, in-state battle, a 10-7 final in that game. Also, Incarnate Word, who, if you remember last year, YSU opened up with, they go into Reno, Nevada and beat Nevada, the Wolfpack there. Eastern Kentucky and Bowling Green, they went to seven overtimes and Eastern Kentucky pulls that out. And then Holy Cross and Buffalo, probably not a game that was on many people's radar, but Holy Cross, who I believe that's right up by Notre Dame there in South Bend, beat Buffalo, who's in the MAC, on an absolute crazy Hail Mary. So just a cool, cool game for there. And then my favorite sign of the weekend from College Game Day, I had to share this one. It said, and it's got a picture of the water boy, Bobby Boucher. It says, Mama says, y'all say Roll Tide because you can't spell elephant. And I just thought that was hilarious. I had to put that out there. So whoever made that sign hats off to you. Well done. So that's a look at college football from this past weekend. The new AP poll came out, and I'm not going to go through every team here, but Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, Clemson are the top five teams. And then, you know, you got your usual suspects in there mixed in, but Penn State now jumps into the top 25. As I mentioned, Kentucky jumps all the way to number 9, and that is who Youngstown State will play this coming weekend. So let's talk a little, let's talk a little YSU football. We don't talk a whole lot of YSU football in here because we have other local outlets that cover them a little bit more, but I want to give credit where credit's due. They start the season off 2-0, beating Duquesne, now beating Dayton, going into Kentucky this coming weekend. The Penguins are 2-0, as I mentioned. They knock off the Dayton Flyers 49-16 at the Ice Castle. Dmitri Crenshaw, the quarterback, 11-17, 230 yards, 5 touchdowns. And I believe that tied a school record. Jaleel McLaughlin, who was a preseason all-conference pick at running back, 13 carries, 149 yards, 1 touchdown on the ground, and also had 1 reception for 52 yards and a touchdown. Max Tomczak at wide receiver, who I believe is Mike Tomczak's son, 3 catches, 92 yards, 1 touchdown. Bryce Oliver, who is actually a Kentucky transfer, comes in, 4 catches, 63 yards, 2 touchdowns. And Luke Hensley, 1 catch, 18 yards, and 1 touchdown. I believe Luke is from Medina and has done a nice job fitting in with the Penguins here. The Penguins outgained the Flyers 478-189 through the air and the ground. And again, they will take on the Kentucky Wildcats this weekend. So let's just take a look at the matchup a little bit. Now, this game, again, will be in Lexington, Kentucky, Kroger Field. I'm sure there's a bunch of people from Youngstown that will be heading down there this weekend. And by the way, if you're in Kentucky, plenty of good bourbon stops down there. If you need some recommendations, shoot me a message. I will get you some. I'm actually headed down to Louisville in about 3 weeks, so I can send you some good bourbon distilleries down there if anybody is looking for that. But Kentucky so far this year knocked off Miami of Ohio and the Florida Gators down in Gainesville. But there have been 6 FCS versus FBS. So FCS is the conference YSU's in, or the league division, whatever you want to say. And FBS, the bowl system, is where Kentucky and Ohio State, you know, all the Power Five teams play in. So there have been 6 games this year, but none yet versus a Power Five team. Last year, there were 4 upsets versus Power Five teams. YSU has lost its last 7 versus FBS teams since beating Pittsburgh 31-17 in 2012. So good luck to the Penguins this weekend. This was the first time Kentucky beat the Florida Gators in back-to-back games or back-to-back seasons since 1976-77. So pretty great for them, but that could mean maybe they're on a letdown. But as we all know, the head coach for the Kentucky Wildcats is Mark Stoops, who is from right here in Youngstown, a Cardinal Mooney graduate, obviously brothers with Bob, and you know, just the whole Stoops family there. So the line right now is set. Kentucky is obviously going to be an overwhelming favorite. They are right now a 27-point favorite at my first check. I'll give you the updated spread on Thursday. But looking at some of the impact players for Kentucky, you have Will Levis, I believe a former Penn State quarterback, one of the best names in all of college football, running back Kavassier Smoke. Wide receiver Tavion Robinson, wide receiver Dane Key, and linebacker J.J. Weaver. Those are sort of some of the guys to look out for on the Kentucky Wildcats. So we will have plenty of info on that on Thursday's show, and you know, just get you more up to date with what's going on in that game and you know, what you can expect from the Penguins and Wildcats this weekend. So with that said, let's do just a final segment and final check-in here. This is just going to be a real quick look at things. But last night, the Cleveland Guardians got another win. They were just on a road trip, won 5 of 6 games, 2 out of 3 against Kansas City, then sweeping the Minnesota Twins. Last night, they beat the LA Angels. They moved to 9 games over 500, 74-65. And, you know, just playing some really, really good baseball right now. They're sitting currently 3 games ahead of the Chicago White Sox and 5 games ahead of the Minnesota Twins. So, just a really, really good baseball team right now. And as I've mentioned probably a dozen times on the show, they are the youngest team in Major League Baseball. Emmanuel Clase gets the save last night. And the cool thing about baseball, you know, baseball's probably one of the more boring sports to watch on TV or be at. And, you know, I might get some pushback on that, but you know, it's a slower game. It moves, you know, it moves at a different pace than football or basketball. But last night, in baseball, you see one of those things every now and then where that you've never seen before. And one of those things in baseball last night happened. So I'm turning on the game and I see Terry Francona kind of arguing, barking on the side, because, Andrés Giménez got what they thought was hit by a pitch. The ball bounced, hit him in the foot, or so they thought. Now, Andrés Giménez apparently stepped back in the batter's box and the umpire would not let him challenge it. Francona comes out and I've never seen so many F-bombs dropped. And Terry Francona is a likable, lovable dude. You know, he almost looks like anybody's grandpa. And just... you don't have to be a lip reader to understand what was being said back and forth between Terry Francona and the umpire. And then, so he gets ejected. And then, during all that, you know, 2-3 minute delay, the Angels pitcher wanted to throw some warm-up pitches and the umpire wouldn't let him. Then the Angels manager comes out, Phil Nevin, I believe, and he is ejected. So, two managers ejected within 5 minutes of each other without a single pitch even being thrown. That was one of those just cool things you I've never seen in baseball. So let's just close it out here with a final look at the Guardians schedule. They got 2 more against the Angels this, you know, tonight and tomorrow. So Tuesday and Wednesday. Thursday, they have a makeup game against the Chicago White Sox, and then a 5-game series again with the Minnesota Twins back in Cleveland. So just a great, great looking homestand right now for the Guardians. If they can take care of business and, you know, win, I don't know, let's say 2/3 of these games, they're really going to put some distance between themselves and the White Sox and the the Twins. So, and if you look at that, the final 6 games of the season are against a bad Kansas City baseball team. So the White Sox and the Twins are going to have to do some damage between now and then to, you know, really push the Guardians, who at the beginning of the season did not look like a playoff team. But right now they are pitching excellent. They're in the top 10 in pretty much every pitching category. And then hitting, they're just a consistent hitting baseball team. They're not going to hit for a ton of power, but they have really nice pieces in their lineup. Ramirez is hitting the ball well, could be an AL MVP candidate. You have Stephen Kwan, an AL Rookie of the Year candidate. Giménez, an all-star, playing great baseball. You got Clase in the back end of the bullpen closing things out. And you got 3 nice starters in there with some other guys filling some roles right now. So this Guardians team, watch out for them, because they really could be something special and well ahead of schedule. So with that said, thank you guys for tuning in. Again, remember to follow the 330 on social media. My show is on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, and then follow Youngstown Studio on all the social media platforms, the three I just mentioned. Plus, make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel so you can get those notifications sent directly to your phone. With that said, my name's Justin, and we will talk to you guys on Thursday.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos.